All right, everybody. Now we have maybe a little discussion about any impression during the meditation or any part of the meditation. We're lighting up, are we? That's nice, candles. We're having an event. Are the candles lit every day? If they are, I haven't noticed it. No.
No, they haven't been. No. Karen Sophie used to do that.
Ah, did she? Ah, right. Did she light the candles, did she?
Yeah.
I was waiting for her to do it.
Well, I always felt she had a fourth-ray mind, you know. I know she didn't agree with me, but she had a great love of beauty.
She did.
Yeah, and she certainly wasn't a fourth-ray personality or a fourth-ray soul. She had to have it coming from somewhere. Well, thank you. Bottoms up. Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah, yeah, and she, you know, she loved music and beauty, and she had certain qualities in her mind which were like those back and forth kind of things that happened with the fourth ray. I believe it was that.
Yes.
And now it's safe to say.
Yes.
Or is it? You just have to bide your time, you know. Well, you know, as we read the other day, we all have all the rays.
Yeah.
We all have those qualities, you know. It's just a question of...
What's prominent?
The emphasis, yeah, what's prominent. And, you know, when you are having certain astrological periods, it can bring out different rays.
Yes.
Even the entry of the progressed moon into a sign can for a while bring out a ray. You just have to keep your eye on yourself and see what's really emerging. Well, what about this meditation this morning? Any thoughts or impressions with respect to it? What was that long ago and far away? I think. Yeah, I think when we get into that kind of alignment with the center of the soul body, and we even invoke beyond that, and then we bring it into the head and try to direct everything from that point, I think it is, in fact, you could feel that something was holding, you know, holding in the group, I guess.
It was the most complete, fantastic meditation I've ever had.
Oh my goodness.
There you go.
Oh my goodness. So it was something worked for you on that.
Honestly, I cannot believe it. I feel as if something has totally shifted. But I don't know. I feel wonderful.
What I think about it is that it was up to this point at least, a meditation which included many of the things we've been studying, trying to get them together in a practical way so you could apply them. That's what because I realized sometime during the meditation, and I've done it now a few times because I've had a couple of classes that have done this. I said, you know, we have a procedure here. The DK leaves many things unconnected, apparently, and you have to connect them. And I felt. And he purposefully leaves that to us to do, I think, because very rarely does he give you an ABC list, do this, do this, do this. Occasionally it happens. But not with these magical formulas, it doesn't happen. And I think, though, that he gave enough hints so we can put it together into a protocol and find a way to bring those energies together to make us somewhat effective in white magic. Not totally yet. You know, we're not there yet. We don't have all the formulas. But there are certain things we can do. So I was also impressed by its potential, I thought. The potential here, if a person really does this, and does this particular alignment of soul, mind, brain, in this rather technical way, involving particular soul energies, very clear mental formulations, and that photography process on the vital airs of the head. I think that's one that one would have to work on a long time to get the ethers of the head so responsive that they really do take the form of the mental thought that you are pondering. And then
nice in CD form, so that, you know, maybe once a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
It needs to be somebody needs to be talking you through it. Mm. Otherwise it's so much going on.
There's a lot happening.
It would almost be impossible to talk yourself through it.
Sure. And you don't want to be having to read the thing, you know, read and then do and read and do.
No.
You don't want that.
You can listen to the
We will have that, you know. It will be there. But I thought to myself, you know, there's very few meditations that I give that I want to do again, because I just like doing new things, you know, a typical Aries thing. But I would like to do this again. I would like to practice it so that it would really work. I like the feeling of connecting up the different parts of myself. You know, high and low, and that whole business of alignment all the way from the top down to the base of the spine. DK does give those things at times, but then they are very powerful, and you can feel the will energy coming in. You can feel it all along your spine, and you can feel what you could do under the influence of that kind of energy. Yeah.
Marvelous.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I'm sure that these forms will clarify in some centuries ahead. In other words, the real science of it will come through. But for right now, we have to piece together what he gives us and make a unity out of it. I'm very intrigued by this vital power.
Is it with the connection to the universal mind?
Yes.
That was so powerful.
And that's straight from DK.
And somehow it was okay.
Yeah.
It was what we had to do.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
It fits in the context of the to come into that energy rapport with the universal mind. Yes. He actually gives that. He tells us that when we're in the midway spot, there must be a connection to universal mind. And actually the solar angel has a connection to universal mind. So if we are connected with the solar angel, we do. But when we think specifically of what are these archetypes in the universal mind, it empowers the thought that we are entertaining. We don't see it as an isolated thought. We see it as something that is part of something that has to happen. And we have our own little piece of it. And the clarity, you know, the sort of the need for the fifth ray in some of these processes, so you can somehow grasp very clearly the relationship between the parts of the thought form. I think that's there too. Well, all the rays are needed, you know, the fourth ray for color, and the seventh ray for right arrangement, and the fifth ray for distinctness. The vital power, he says, the Agnisurians respond to the sound, the waters ebb and flow. It was the one before, wasn't it? Rule number 7. How does it go? The plane whereon the vital power must be sought are seen. The dual forces on the plane, and I think to myself, this vital power has more meaning than one, because there is some kind of vital power that does arise within the astral body, and which does animate the thought form and gives it a sufficient intensity of desire to precipitate. But there's also a vital power which is involved in the center of the head. And that grows with making all of the energies of the body available to the pineal gland and bringing down the jewel and the lotus energy and even energies above. There's a very distinctive vital power in the ethers of the head. So to me, the vital power seems to have an application on a number of planes, so far etheric and also astral. But when you look at the center of the jewel and the lotus, or what that is stimulated from, that's the source of the vital power. So I'm a little confused that it's only on the astral plane where the vital power must be sought. I haven't decided whether I can completely go with that yet. The dual forces on the plane whereon the vital power must be sought are seen. Well, you see the two forces, but why are you seeking the only vital power on the astral plane? I haven't answered that for myself yet, because I feel that what is being generated inside the head is of incredible vitality and reflects the spirit and the soul as well. So, you know, ponder on this. I'm working on it. It's also like drowning. There's more than one meaning, isn't there?
Being gives us in that of the soul in the five
pranas. Yes.
I think there's something there. I have a feeling that there's a connection between the vital air in the head and the physical body.
Yes.
Even.
Connection between the light in the head and the physical body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first day we read out those five pranas. We read the five pranas and located the one which was likely to be the one in which the cave was forming, between the nose and the top of the head. Does anybody? What was it? It was, I forget which one it was, Vyana or? It's not apana. Vipana, probably.
Yeah, Vipana.
I think that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The nose and the top of the head. Vipana. But you know, knowing the names of the things is important, but having the experience of working with a magnetic center in the middle of your head, this is the thing we need. And also, it is, in a way, the entry to the path. DK talks about the indigo disc that you can find there. And it's possible to go through the portal and go to higher planes via that. As a matter of fact, I wonder, you know, if when you're trying to imagine what it's like to be in the middle of the egoic lotus, which he calls it by other names, okay? He doesn't tell you you're doing that, but you can pretty well see that that's what you're doing. Let's see, what does he call it? Right here.
He
calls it the circle of something. Now I'm too high. I'm too high here. Maybe it's down here. We call it, you know, some circle of concentration, something of that nature. Maybe I'll look for the word center. And that's one place. No, and that's all we've got. And I wonder about this word, center. Maybe not. Okay, your head center. No, that's all there is. It's here. Maybe the word circle. Aha, here it is. That's the word. From that point of power outside the form, from the central sphere of unification. That's another name for the causal body. The central sphere of unification. And from the focus point within that circle of consciousness, that focus point is you, but it's also the jewel and the lotus, it's the central fire, it's the representation of the monad within the central sphere of unification. In other words, the point is a projection of the monad. The monad itself is only a point. As a matter of fact, every being is a point. And the amazing thing about points is they don't have any dimension. They exist but have no dimension. So I think it's a very worthy exercise to imagine yourself as a point without dimension. You simply are. You're there, you are, but you have no spatial or even temporal aspect to your nature. I think it would be the closest we could come to imagining ourselves as spirit. It simply is and cannot be measured in any way. So anyway, these kinds of meditations, though...
Could it be measured in luminosity, though? You know, light.
Well, what you would measure is...
Light.
You would measure other things. In other words, spirit is spirit, but according to the intensity of its presence,
yes,
then everything around it would take on more light,
yes,
or less light. But the spirit itself is only what it is. It has no... it's unchanging. It is forever what it is. In other words, what I'm really trying to say is that spirit per se cannot evolve. It is unique and perfect forever. It is pure being. You know, say, how does pure being evolve? It doesn't. It's just that which always has been and always will be. And when we can get some little sense within ourselves of being that point of that which always is and will be, and when we can move that point of observation around within the different fields, great power can come through that. Matter of fact, one of the things that I've discovered is that working with the center of the chakras, the center of the egoic lotus, the center of the monad, this is where the power lies. And when I imagine connecting up the jewels and connecting up the centers, some very strong being force comes in, or will force. It's definitely working along the first aspect. But you know, you have to experiment with that within, and I'm certainly experimenting. I'm experimenting with the process of being nothing, just being. Just being. If I think I am something, I am mistaken. And if I think that I'm less than everything, I am mistaken. So I'm working on this identity yoga, if I can call it that way. You know, and it's nothing new, I just give it a different name. And from the focus point within that circle of consciousness, I imagine that to be the presence of the point within the jewel in the lotus. That's how I imagine it. And from that, I take the energy straight down to the top of the head, to the central jewel, maybe through the permanent, higher permanent atoms, and also through the lower ones, and then into the center of the head, so that by the time I'm finished, I feel as if I have an alignment from pure being to the center of my head. And then, of course, I will want to take it down to the base of my spine, which sometimes BK gives you a meditation exactly to do that. Meditation number 3 in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2. It goes from the top to the bottom. And basically you start out with the soul, you go down, and then you go up all the way, and then you come down. There's no up and down, you know. When you start working with a point, you realize there's no up and down. All there is a change of scene. But these are sort of what you would call like inner images, and everybody has to work with the images that work for them. Some more visual people, coloristic people, they'll see different things. Some kinesthetic people, they're going to feel it. And I like to work with abstraction. So you have to find your own way. That's building the Antahkarana in your own way. You may do exactly what DK says. I mean, it's just fine. He's got a great formula there. But ultimately, you have to find your own way in. It cannot be replicated because you are so unique, having had such varied experiences over so many millions of years, your own way. So this vital power for me is the power of the monad in the jewel and the lotus and in the center of the head. And then it, to me, it's reinforced by my motive on the astral plane. In other words, will and desire are closely related. So I find the sanctified desire on the astral plane to reinforce my will. That's how I do it. Now, if you have prepared everything really well, it doesn't mean that now the thought form is just going to happen in the world. Because we don't know the techniques which blend the fires and the water. We don't know that yet. So we cannot give it a completely effective, independent existence. But we can do two things. We can make the thought form extremely clear, well motivated, and vital, and then it inspires us. And then we go out in the world and we do it. Now that's a magical act too. When you are very clear about what you have to do, you're very inspired and motivated, and you have the energy, you go out there and you do it. That's magic also. But another way of getting the job done is to have a very clear, highly motivated conception, and you actually imagine it going out into the world as a thought form, and other people pick it up and they carry it out. In other words, a thought can be a powerful motivator of other people's minds. So Master Moria says, half the world thinks and the other half carries out the thought. This is one way of operating, short of absolutely effective manifestational magic. We're not there yet. We can't make it just, you know, if I were a master, I could project that thought, and right in front of you, it would take physical form.
Also, there's something in the book where it said, you know, something about knowing your brother's need and entering his mind.
Yes, yes, yes. Enter your brother's heart, enter your brother's mind,
yes.
Blend with your brother's soul. Yes, yes.
Yes.
That's the motive.
Yes.
Yes.
So, I feel that it's happening in a small way. In this group, that you feel you get your own idea.
Yes.
And then you talk to your neighbor. And she or he has just got the same idea.
Yes.
So I don't know whether it's spreading in the meditation or...
Yeah, or whether we're responsive to certain ideas from the ashram. We're all like one receiver with many different, you know, aspects to it. Yeah, so we are a receiving mechanism, and we do get telepathy is at play. You know, telepathy is not just a vertical, not just a horizontal thing, right? It's the kind of telepathy of the telepathic workers in the seed groups is a vertical telepathy. And because it's almost assumed that from person to person it will pass. But our goal is telepathic rapport with the minds that are holding the plan on the higher planes. That's what we have to do. And we're getting there. So I think you're right. It doesn't happen all at once, and it doesn't happen in really big ways to start out. But it happens in little ways, and you notice it, that it's happening. If you have a good conversation with somebody, and you have a good idea, they might pick it up and do something with it. And that's a form of magic too. Because we know we've been inspired by others. Look, Master DK has written hundreds of thousands of words. We have picked up those words and it has changed our life. We're doing what is suggested. We're carrying out those thought forms. But he's teaching us about the coming of a very particular kind of magic in a future time, which will be effective. In other words, mind will be able to precipitate matter without any intermediary. And that will be very interesting and very dangerous if we're not rightly motivated and have loving thoughts in line with the plan. So that's why he doesn't give us everything.
Telepathic interplay.
Yes.
And I think it has to be by somebody. He tells us that it takes place very often, but unconsciously.
Sure. What I was meaning was that the notion of its horizontal nature is so well established in our minds. It is that. The notion of vertical telepathy is not as well known in humanity. So that's why I was emphasizing that. But in fact, of course, the horizontal dimension.
Both are taking place at the same time.
And sure. It's the cross, you know, and both can occur at the same time. What I have noticed, however, is that the conception of telepathy in the public mind is more horizontal than vertical. So I choose to emphasize that. The idea that there is a divine purpose on the monadic plane, or a divine plan on the atmic plane, and that you can be in telepathic rapport with that, is not a popular idea. Maybe among esotericists it is more so. So I just emphasize the vertical part just to bring balance into the kinds of thoughts that are circulating. Well, you know, it's worth revisiting this meditation. And we'll see how the meditation schedule goes, because we have five rules for the astral plane, and I've more or less devised meditations for all of them. But this one somehow contains the whole process. And the others maybe focus on some specifics. So we'll see how it goes. I think it's very important for us to have the feeling of rapport with the solar angel as it underlies the egoic lotus. In other words, the egoic lotus should become for us a factual dimension that we can center ourselves within and feel the quality of. We may have to use our imagination first. And I think that as we begin to do that, then the nature of the being that we call the solar angel will begin to dawn upon us. Because the solar angel is an incredible being who's a member of the council chamber of the sun, of the solar logos. Obviously, this is a master of all degrees, or an initiate of all degrees. And our road to the solar angel is via the egoic lotus, because the solar angel substands the egoic lotus. The egoic lotus is an expression of the nature of part of the solar angel. We sometimes hear about the soul on its own plane, and we sometimes think that's the higher mental plane. I don't think it is at all. I think that in a way, the higher mental plane is the lowest plane where the presence of the solar angel is naturally found. But the solar angel itself is minimally a Buddhic being, and maybe much higher than that even, maybe connected with those beings that are about to achieve liberation onto the cosmic astral plane. There is a hierarchy of beings. I haven't solved this problem yet, okay? But I'll just tell you what I think it is. There's a hierarchy of beings that is called the fifth unmanifested creative hierarchy. And Well, I can start any place. I'll find it. This one. And this group here, called Veiling the Christ. The fifth creative hierarchy is on the verge of liberation. It is active on the intellectual plane. That's very enigmatic. And to me, this hierarchy is very much connected with with the hierarchy we normally call solar angels. This hierarchy is the fifth of this group of liberated beings. It's not quite liberated. Almost on the cosmic astral plane. And if we check the next chart, we will see that the hierarchy normally called solar angels is also the fifth. Or at least the fifth creative hierarchy. And interestingly enough, there's another group up here on the Buddhic plane called solar angels as well. There's a connection between the fifth, almost on the cosmic astral, the human hierarchy where it makes the comment solar angels, and then this fifth creative hierarchy on the higher mental plane. And if we're going to ever solve the mystery of the solar angels, we have to know the nature of those three hierarchies. DK says, we will not solve the mystery of the solar angels. We will not solve it. But we can make it simple. Even in Alcoholics Anonymous, they say you have a higher power. So in a very mystical way, those 12-step programs are connecting with the solar angel. They are connecting with that higher power on the higher mental plane. And we can simply say, we know there is a solar luminous power within us, and it is on planes higher than our normal personality. And when we begin to imagine our connection, even if it's with a ball of light, like a sun, a connection is made with this great being. Obviously not all of the being, because we couldn't stand it. But with as much of the solar angel as he or it has allowed to infuse man, we can connect with that. And I think in the whole magical process, that is a must. This connection with the solar power on the higher mental plane is the motivating force of our whole magical work. Otherwise, we're just engaged in lunar magic, which is exactly what the opposite side does. So we need the solar angel in our work. And when you imagine yourself as a point in the middle of the egoic lotus, you are giving an opportunity for the infusion of the presence of the solar angel to occur. And I think before we undertake anything magic, we have to do that. It wasn't done properly in Atlantis, obviously, because emotion and desire carried the whole thing away. But now we're in a different position. I mean, do you get in your own life the feeling of what you would call the solar angel? Do you get that? From time to time? It may have a different quality to it. Solar fire feels different. It waits to infuse the consciousness. It tries to do that. It waits for us to be open so that it can happen. But remember this, that the true solar angel is a being much higher than our monad. And I've said it before, a true solar angel is of greater development than any of our masters of wisdom. Now, does that sound like a strange thought? Because, you know, as I've said before, a master of the wisdom might, if he passed the tests, enter the council chamber of Shambhala. Maybe. And the solar angel is already a member of the council of the solar logos. So we are in touch, potentially, with an aspect of a very great being. And we want to feel that substance. And the way we do it is by somehow getting in touch with our own egoic lotus, which is the vehicle of expression for the solar angel. We'll never touch the entirety of the solar angel. Just like we're not going to touch the entirety even of our own monad yet. But we will touch an expression of the solar angel. And that we need to have. And then we would begin to live a solar life, which is a lot different from living according to what's left from the moon. You know what I mean? We don't want to keep living a lunar life. We want the moon to reflect the sun. These are really deep matters, but the whole your whole study of occultism over tens of years really boils down to the difference between the sun and the moon. And it's a big opportunity to become a sun rather than remain responsive to a form of life which often hides from the sun. That boils it down in a nutshell. This meditation knocked me out, I tell you. I thought, well, you know, this is really power. This is a power and magic and effectiveness. But I saw the kind of training that would be required to do it right. Well, fortunately, there's more than one life. Okay. Let's go on to the other work. Rule 9. Since my voice seems to be going on me, I'm going to have you do more reading today. Oh, goodness, we did a lot of commenting on this, too. Oh, my goodness. Okay. I have to... Is that you? That's you. Okay. All right. Condensation next ensues. The fire and waters meet. The form swells and grows. Let the magician set his form upon the proper path. So in the last couple of rules, we've been talking about your choice, your decision, and choosing the right path. And in this one, it looks like we actually get the form going along the path we intend. By the way, did you come up with a... In your meditation, did you come up with a project? Something that you think may have been planted in you by the solar angel due to its meditation? Did you come up with something that you felt the solar angel wants to see created through you? Did you? Anybody want to volunteer? To discuss? Any brave person that felt they ran into a thought or an idea that the solar angel had actually, in a way, meditated upon and planted in their consciousness? Anybody?
Will Kellers.
What I got this morning was a graph. You call it graphs or a drawing?
A graph, yeah.
Yes. Because I'm working with the colors, but for also the theory behind the colors. And then how to connect, first of all, the opposition or the complementary colors.
Right.
But I saw it as a graph.
As a graph.
And then to take the trigger colors, like the, what do you call it, the substantive colors. You call it that?
What are they called?
Subtractive colors.
Subtractive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have the triplicity.
Triplicity, yeah.
Yeah. So you like you have a circle around with all the 12 signs. Then you have like two triangles where you connect the each corner.
Yeah.
So you have the 2, the 3, and the 12.
You know what strikes me when you say that is that we should not expect that what we discover as a possible idea is really different from our very strong interests. In other words, if we've been really, really interested in something for a long time, it's very likely that it has an origin on a plane higher than our own mind. So what we may be doing here is discovering the source of our own major interests and more detail about what the angel intends for the way the interest is to unfold. So, you know, for myself, maybe it was no big surprise, but I saw this great big blue book shaping up. It was a bigger book than Cosmic Fire, but it was like the Cosmic Fire book, but it was the Tibetan's book. And it was beautiful blue and gold, and the basic image was of me offering the book to people. Mm-hmm. See, so that symbolically told me of the project, which of course has been my major interest, just like yours, for a long time. But it gave it a certain condensation, you might say, a certain precipitation. And I could feel the thought image actually registering in the ethers. You know, and I said, well, I have to work on this. But I could feel that registration. I could feel something in my head conforming itself to this image. So I said, I know I'm on the way now, but I need repetition. I need to routine it to make it right. Because this could be a very powerful image in my life, and I could do something with this. Let's see. What other things came to you?
It's quite strange because the image I had was like a circle of small groups reading a large blue book. So I think that might have been a little bit of telepathy, maybe. Really quite amazing. The image.
Yes.
It pulsated and became that beautiful deep sapphire in colour. So first of all the image and then the colour. I mean it's amazing.
The color is important, I think. So you know when we say, well, was this telepathy? But you see, well, probably many of us are responsive vertically to the same source. Mm. So, you know, I think also vertical telepathy is involved.
I wouldn't say anything about it. I was thinking, what is not established yet, we shouldn't talk about. But I would say something. It was also about the groups. It was also about establishing a point for studying my coherence. But, and had this experience of light, saw a form and died.
Yes.
I mean, you, okay, that's powerful. But at the same time, I had this information that you have to wait. There are other things that have to be done before you can fit into the great pattern.
Yes. Probably as we got closer to the physical plane rules, those questions of timing would enter in. Because, you can have a wonderful idea and a clear image of what it should be, but circumstances have to be correct for its precipitation. So very, yes, of course, all these second-ray solar angels, what are you going to do? Just another book fell out of their library. What other thoughts or images came? Anybody else that feels like even like indicating the direction of another thought or image? Yeah, go ahead.
Of course, I never had such much energy coming like this morning, but all the waves of energy were grayish and brown.
Okay.
Really low colored.
Okay.
And that made me think that I had been told that in the moment when I was young, in a moment of utmost fear, a suicidal being slipped into my system.
Okay.
And since I was told there, I had a lot of fun with this guy.
Dealing with that, yeah.
Me and my wife, we joke a lot about him, and I feel a kind of honor that he is. He felt a kind of comfort in my system, but back to this matter here, I have a feeling that it's time that I, true or not, I don't relate to him, but I feel it's time that I do something about it, because there's a lot of energy, even if it was some bad colors.
Okay.
So it was quite strong, but I don't want to get rid of him until I can feel he's good in way.
So okay.
He's provided for.
Interesting.
I like him.
You like him? Well, yeah, I wonder if it's... this is interesting psychologically. Could it be a being? Could it be a sub-personality? Could it be an aspect of yourself? Is it a real other entity? All of these are questions to be answered. It's a psychological reality, for sure.
What helped me knowing about this is that... some of this stuff, I think, is mine. Doesn't have to be.
Exactly.
That's very important to me.
Yes.
And it made sense. My whole life came to a kind of sense, knowing this.
Interesting.
But today it came up with all this.
So when you say maybe doing something about it, does that mean inviting this being to go on its way?
Oh, yes.
That's what you mean.
I think that it has to be, because we both need to go
your separate ways.
Yes.
How interesting. Okay. Good. All right. Good. Other impressions that you had about something trying to happen through your life? Anybody? Yes.
I have a Venus on my Mercury's, and I have for a long time made this meditation. And I have always ask for that I do the right service to the clients. The right service for the people, so I can guide them in the right way to give them the right key to the right door.
Okay.
And one of the first time I was here at Holy Garden, when you and Nicholas was in that astrologica class, I didn't understand the language.
Yeah.
And one of the first meditations we had down here, I saw in the head, the heart and the head turned around slowly. And the color was, when you look into a body, you've seen it on film, and I didn't understand what I saw. But when we come up, you talked about the heart and the head.
Yes.
And yesterday you come back to me, and I saw the goddess of freedom standing in there with a lot of light. It was a very strong meditation for me.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back, and I'm wondering if I remember. Was Nicholas or I leading the meditation?
Yes.
I'm remembering something like that, that you talked about. Yeah. Well, you know, creativity is a long process. It can last many lives. The soul has a plan, the soul has a project. And it's going to work out through what we are. And it's going to get more intense with every life. The thought form of the soul is going to become clearer and more powerful with every life. So what we have to do now is somehow grasp the stage of clarity at which it now stands and bring through as much clarity into expression as we can now. And have the confidence that we will become a finished work at some point before the fourth initiation. By the time the fourth initiation occurs, the soul, solar angel, has completed its project of expression through its personality, its soul in incarnation, through us. And we will be a consummated creation by that time. The number four, perfection, creativity, beauty, and all of that. And we're on our way, life after life, to expressing little parts of that completed beauty that we'll express by the time the fourth degree occurs. It's a beautiful creative project, and the more we're in touch with our guide, as it were, the better we will do in bringing it through. So this is serious business, and we can apply ourselves to the magical process even now without having to have all the magical words. In the old days, we had plenty of magical words, but no spiritual contact. It's much better this way, speaking from experience, which I'm sure that a number of us have had. So thank you for that. Did you take it any further, or did it seem that it's coming down?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, in other words, it's something that is precipitating.
Okay, yes. Come back to me, this.
Yeah.
But also this freedom, the goddess of freedom, but it was also kind of the solar angel. And then the last in the meditation, I saw the sea. Quite clear and silver, blue, green, beautiful, and calm. Completely calm. Isn't that beautiful?
I've got to show you this, and I think you know it, but I've got to show you this. Through the opening on the summit of the pyramid, dropped from the blue of heaven, a key came down. It landed at the feet of the discouraged worker. The key was of pure gold, the shaft of light. Upon the key, a label. And writ in blue, these words, "Destroy that which thou hast built, and build anew. But only build when thou hast climbed the upward way, traversed the gallery of tribulation, and entered into light within the chamber of the king. Build from the heights, and thus shew forth the value of the depths." This is a fifth-ray formula, but it's just fantastic. And it's gorgeous. And by the way, I noticed a couple of mistakes here. We have to put the word "hast." You can't say "thou hast." Only when thou hast climbed. Where's another one, right? Where is it? It landed at the feet, the key was pure gold, shaft of pure light. Destroy that which thou hast built. Old form of English. But this is the connection with Venus. See, the idea of pure gold and blue, it's Venus and the fifth ray. And you see, the fifth ray worker gets very discouraged. And at a certain point, he is in despair, and he says, in deep despair, he cried aloud unto the God he had forgot, "Give me the key. I alone can do no more good. Give me the key." And then silence reigned, in which the intuition can act, and then the key drops from heaven, the opening of the summit of the pyramid, right there. The key drops in, see. So it somehow fits with our meditation and our magical studies.
Because that's what the anchor is, isn't it? It's
yes,
the
anchor, the Venus.
It's Venus, the anchor is the key, absolutely, absolutely. And Anna Minna has a Venus very powerful in the chart on the ascendant, exactly on the ascendant, see. So somehow there's a key here. There's a key. Page 169 of Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. Yeah, it's so beautiful. What did you?
Venus,
yeah.
Descendant,
yes, in Taurus.
Yes.
But powerful, very powerful. And you know, when you say you always want to serve people correctly, that Venus, you know, serving them with the light, Venus in Taurus on the descendant, that there's a whole form of service in that position, bringing the lighted key to people, the key to solve their way out of darkness. Yeah. Is there anybody else that has an image or the sense of a plan you wanted to mention? Okay. Well, we get the idea. A thought form is in process of precipitating. Actually, we ourselves are a thought form. We are that which the soul has made. And our first project is to get it right. So we reflect as much of the soul's intention for ourselves as we possibly can. We have to become the ideal human being in the eyes of the soul. What would that be? We have to ask ourselves. All right. Now, let me see if I can wean myself away from reading. Who will read this next paragraph? Okay. Yeah.
This rule is very briefly summed up in the injunction: let desire and mind be so pure and so equally apportioned, and the created form so justly balanced, that it cannot be attracted towards the destructive or left-hand path.
We learn in this that it is the unbalanced thought form with too much material impulse in it that is attracted to the left-hand path. And to me, what is said here is make sure that solar fire and fire by friction are balanced in your thought form. Why would you need fire by friction in this thought form too?
Desire to carry one down.
Yeah, you see, it will have no formal existence if there is no fire by friction. But then why do you need solar fire connected with your thought form? Because without it, then what? Well, you won't. Yes, you. Yes. Without the solar fire, it will not be a serviceable thought. thought form serving the plan and eventually serving the spirit, you know. It will not serve the archetype without the soul of fire. So the black magician is very mental. There, oh, no, it's beginning. Black magician. How do you say it, Ian? Black magician is very mental. We read yesterday that the third ray type, who does not shatter his dweller, right, becomes a black magician, acquiring knowledge only for himself or selfish acts. So solar fire is automatically selfless. Solar fire is selfless. So the love reflects in the mind and through the astral body and renders it a spiritual thought form, not just a thought form which can precipitate, not just a material form. So I sense a lot of the sign Libra here and Venus. Let desire and mind be so pure and so equally apportioned, like two wings. You have to have the love wing and the mind wing of your thought form. And it won't veer off towards the left-hand path because love is just a little wing and here's the big wing over here. It will not go off to the left because there will be sufficient strength of the love nature. Okay, condensation, etc., etc., so the necessity for purity and fundamental forms. So why don't you read, continue, Mimi, reading from here. That was all they gave. That's all there is in cosmic fire. In other words, what you just read, that's it.
That's it.
In cosmic fire, that's all he gives. And then he expanded upon it. So again, condensation next ensues. The fire, mind, and waters, desire, meet. The form swells and grows in a balanced manner. Let the magician set his form upon the proper path, which will be the right-hand path. Okay, now you can start to read here, the necessity for purity.
The rule is very briefly summed up in the induction. Oh, this is it. Is
yeah.
Right. The reasons for this brevity may be stated to be due to the extreme simplicity of this rule, and in the consciousness of the man who knows, and its extreme complexity from the standpoint of the casual reader. Only the simplest and most practical of its significances is there given, but perhaps a few of the deeper meanings can be imparted.
Okay. Condensation next ensues. It's very technical in certain respects, because this is how to grow a thought form through the use of fire and water together, and how to set that form upon. It's very technical in some ways, but from another point of view, it's very simple. You now have a clear mental idea and pure desire to back that idea up, do the right thing with the form created. That's how simple it can be. But alchemical technicalities will enter here, and he'll maybe deal with a little bit of it here. So, go ahead.
It is interesting to note that as progress is made upon the path, the forms in which truth can be given become more and more simple.
Sorry.
Whilst the meaning grasped becomes more and more wide and inclusive, and hence involves, on analysis, more and more complexity.
So that explains it. simple forms, wide meaning, and therefore detailed analysis required of the wide meanings. Does each subplane have its own symbol? Blah blah blah. Okay, I don't know why I put that in, but anyway, this is a little something on symbols. Read this, please. Is it too small, or can you get it?
No, these records are mostly used by the Lord of the World and his pupils to ascertain information in connection with planetary centers. They are arranged in such a way that the entire record of any group, however vast and extensive, is embodied in 7 sheets of symbols, each containing 49 symbols. These sheets are changed and corrected once every 7 years and are precipitated on astral matter by an effort of will by the Chohan responsible for the particular group involved.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. So, you know, whatever group it is, it can be a solar system, it can be a human being, it can be a constellation. 7 sheets of symbols with 49 symbols each. So that's 343. That's why I was asking about 343 symbols determining the entire evolutionary process of a being.
That's up to 10, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. So 343 symbols to give us the evolutionary process of the being concerned. So, and the reason that I put that there was because he talked about simplicity. You know, the forms can be simple, but the meaning can be vast in its implications. And also to take a look at how it is the masters communicate these things. Master DK has written 24 books or whatever, all these English words, and here in just 7 pages of symbols is the whole story of our solar system. So, you know, the old saying, a picture is worth 1,000 words. Every time you get one of these symbols, you have to break it down analytically into word after word after word to somehow contain what it means. It's very complex on analysis. That's what he's telling us.
This talk between the two, please. That's a symbol in itself. It says a lot about the historic the purpose of humanity.
Yes. Yes, the purpose of humanity was contained in...
In 3, 4, 3.
3, 4, 3.
Four between the two trees.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Where did you say that? That sounds right.
It is not in a fire to know it.
Okay. Let me put that down. Yeah, 3, 4, 3. Yeah, okay, well, I certainly see the... I see the animal kingdom on one side, human kingdom here, and the three then indicates or signifies what? The hierarchy of triads, possibly? What do they call the triple flowers, perhaps? The hierarchy that's the next higher hierarchy to humanity. There's also this, too, the 3, 4, 5. That's another...
But fire is a part of the...
Mm-hmm, sure.
Way of
see, this is like, this down here, this is animal, human, spiritual. That's one way of doing it, too. Okay, well, the wisdom is wonderful. It contains the complete picture. Okay, continue, please.
Finally, resort is had to symbols, and the cosmic plan is grasped through the presentation of geometrical forms to the inner eye of the aspirant.
So I think here, this will not happen to us. This will only happen when the third initiation has been taken. And why would we say that? Only after the third initiation.
But we all get pictures of geometrical
Sure, but this is. Sure, but this I think is an initiatory process. In other words, this is how it's done in the initiations. You are presented with certain symbols that reveal the whole thing, and we're warming up for it with whatever we get. But this is a very deliberate process in the initiation chamber, and I'm thinking that. When the eye of Shiva is developed after the third degree, because here's what I want to say it, this kind of learning can occur rapidly. He tells us that after the third initiation proceeds through the presentation of symbols. I would like to find the quotation exactly, and I would go hunting for it. You know, it would be too difficult for me to find it right now. But he basically says that, and I want to see if we can find that place where he talks about geometry in the abstract mind. I wonder. Okay, I think I can find it this way. I hope so. Geom. I'm just going to say that. Okay, and oh gosh, that word geom is quite big. Okay, geom, key geometry of life. No, I don't have it here, but maybe geometry, key of evolution. No, these are not the ones I was looking for. I just pulled out a reference about concrete mind and numbers and geometry and the abstract mind. So this is why I want to tie it in with the third initiation. What happens in terms of the dimension that you can focus on at the third initiation? What is open to you at that point? Exactly so. Geometrical. Is there nothing? Wait, why am I not getting this? Maybe it was in a footnote. That might be the problem. They don't pick up the footnotes on the Alice Bailey CD-ROM. Geometric. Just try that. Geometric rising of the fire. Geometric rising of the fire. No. No, it's not here. So that's what it must be. Geometrical, and there's nothing there. And geometry, there's six references. Mental plane psychometry, numerology, geometry. Certain types of mathematical bent with a tendency to divine geometry, no. And probably... No, it's in a footnote somewhere. That's the problem. And I tried to look for that before, and I should have saved it out. But it's. But anyway, let me just look up this number. This thing when it says numbers. Let's see how that will work. I might get it that way. Okay. Humanity's first motion, no. Okay, I'm just going to have to let it go.
What about numerical?
Do you think so? Maybe? Try it. There's a lot of stuff. I just ran into it just a couple of days ago. That's what's frustrating. No numerical, nothing. Okay, try it over here. Oh, well, okay. Let's see. Mind. Concrete. Uh-huh. No. Oh, well, it's there. It's there. It's the whole idea about arithmetic and the concrete mind and geometry and the abstract mind. And at the third initiation, your polarization becomes higher mental to the point that you can take in the lowest part of the spiritual triad. So that's what I'm saying. If from the third initiation on, let's see, geometrical symbols, it might be there, you are given initiation in symbols. Initiation, symbols, geometric, okay, geometric, geometry, symbols, initiation, symbols. Well, there's just, let's see, at 5? Oh, try that. No. At 5. Simultaneous color symbol. Does anybody know how to use the Alice Bailey CD-ROM so that you use an at mark and it locates the words that are close together? It's like if I said...
Don't you call it adjacent?
What is it?
Adjacent, certainly.
Yes, adjacent, yes. Yes, adjacent word. Adjacent, that's the word. Okay. Initiation, symbols, taught, try that. Okay. No, taught by symbols. Anyway, I can't find it right now. I'm having a hard time finding things right now. Would anybody like to teach this class today? I know.
Not for your own meditation.
Yeah, maybe so. I feel the break is coming on. Okay, so anyway, where are we here? There we are. Okay, I'll find it maybe on the break. Okay, finally resort is had to symbols and the cosmic planets grasp for the presentation of geometrical forms to the inner eye of the aspirant. Geometrical. Did I try geometrical already?
Yes.
And how many were there?
None.
64 symbols. Initiate. Okay, I'm a very tenacious person. This is the problem.
It is hard to give up.
A glance at these geometric charts will indicate in a moment the status of the initiate. Well, it's close. It's close. Okay. Proceed.
The cardinal point emphasized in this rule is purity. And in the last analysis, purity is largely a question of motive. If the incentive to action of any kind in the three worlds is based on personality desire and brought about by the applied use of the mind, then impurity characterizes that action.
That's a rather interesting approach, isn't it, to purity and impurity? So our subject here is the necessity for purity. And it is related to what's called the condition of the waters. So you can never have the astral waters in the correct condition if any personal motive for your creation exists. And this is a very hard saying, isn't it? In other words, we cannot have personal motives in our white magical creative process. Okay, so no personal motives in the creative process.
Where did I find it?
What? Where is it? Footnote?
75, 771. The third aspect works through mathematical formulas.
Okay. Okay, well that is that it?
Yes.
That's one of them.
Yeah.
It's not the one I was looking for, but it's a good one.
Yeah, that's the three aspects of going.
Yes.
Now, the first aspect works through a work of power.
Yes.
And the second aspect through mantras.
Mantras, yes. Yes, yes, I remember that one. Yes. That's a good one. I want the one that puts numbers on the concrete mental plane and geometrical forms on the abstract mind.
Okay.
That's the one I want. So, and you've just given me another idea. Abstract mind, geometry. This is getting a little bit geometrical. Oh, I'm going to say something. All right. All right. So basically, what's this all about? Archetypal means pure. Personal does not reflect the archetype. So, personality is not a whole, it's separative, it's non-archetypal, and when the fire burns the personality, it restores the archetype. Now, this is very interesting. Uranus rules the final burning ground. It is the planet of logoic archetypes. Leo, the archetype of identity. And it's a completely impersonal type of energy. And it's almost as if there is personality, then Uranus, with its true archetypes, cannot get through. So, in other words, I'm defining impurity in a different way. I'm saying that when you are personal, you are limited and you do not reflect the true design in the heavens. That is impure. Unless the true design in the heavens is reflected, there is impurity. And so use fire, which is pure, use fire to be rid of personality and thus receive the pure archetype. That means go onto the burning ground to be pure and live the archetypal life. So after we've been through the fires, we can burn away the distortion which prevents the true form, as Plato would call it, from coming through into the lower planes. It's almost as if the person bends the light so you get a distortion. And we've got to get out of the way of the descending archetype. Okay, so I said here, we are on our way to becoming geometrically perfect. And so we can connect pure reason and divine geometry. Let's go ahead.
If the impulse emanates from the dweller in form, it is then subordinated and controlled by the dweller to the desired end.
Okay.
Then the characteristic is purity within the group, limitations. For absolute purity only exists when entire freedom from control has been brought about.
And this would be freedom from form control. And remember, what does he mean here by the dweller in the form? He doesn't mean the dweller on the threshold, does he? He doesn't mean that. If the impulse is emanating from the personality, it's not emanating from the dweller in the form. But the soul is the dweller in the form. It's not just the human being. So, if the impulse is then subordinated to the dweller, who is the soul or spirit, and that's what that means. Whoop, get rid of that. Okay, to the soul or spirit. And he controls this expression to his own ends. Then the characteristic is purity. In other words, purity coming from soul or spirit within the group limitations, because the group will always limit the purity of the archetype, but it's more pure than the personality was. So absolute purity exists only when entirely freedom from the lower control has been brought about. Go ahead.
Then the The soul is group conscious and group controlled, and until the cause of the body has been overcome and liberation from its control achieved, the real significance of purity will not be comprehended.
Isn't that interesting? So even the causal body is a source of impurity and distortion. In other words, think of that. It's in the Bible. The rich young man who had fulfilled everything, all the law, came to Jesus or Christ and said, "What more shall I do?" And he said, "You've done everything except one thing. You know, sell all you have, give the money to the poor, and follow me." So you have to sell your causal body. And because the causal body is a source of distorting triadal truth. So basically, what we have here is we have a situation where we're trying to create according to the will of the soul. But even the will of the soul and its design is not an absolutely pure archetype as found on still higher levels. But at least it's something. It's a whole lot better than the personality distortions that usually are behind our creations. Now think about things you've created in your life. Do you think you have created some things for personality goals? Do you think you have created some things that were a mixture of personality and soul goals? Do you think you have created some things that were pretty much for soul goals? Can you review those creations in your life? I mean, you know, oftentimes, think about when you go out to make a living, or you create a career, or you do something like that. There's nothing wrong with it. You've got to get on in the world, don't you? It is often with a rather high personality objective to uphold your place in society and to make your own living and do the right thing and so forth. But those are not necessarily soul creations, are they? No. And then there's the question of mixed motives. That can come, where it's a bit of this and that. And is there anything for any one of us that has been purely a creation in response to the soul? It's for everyone to ponder, you know what I mean? And even if we found one that was pretty good, we'd probably be able to go through it and find little lines of motives in there that were maybe not 100%. So I'm thinking about that, you know, I want to subject myself to that kind of thought. Well, you got to examine it. You got to see what it is, you know. I think I created many things to express my personality. I can see that. And then some things changed, then I got some higher ideals, and then I began to create to express those ideals. But there was mixture. I couldn't get myself out of it entirely. I'm wondering if I've ever reached the point where I've been able to get myself out of it. Why, many people have wanted me out of it, but I've never been able to get myself out of it. Everyone can ask themselves what you think. So here is a question. If you can't even get complete purity from the causal body until you've overcome it, do you ever feel controlled by your causal body? You know, because the causal body itself is the highest form of I-ness of the human being. It's not the limited, petty, personal I-ness. It's a bigger type of I-ness, and it's still a distortion.
But the purity has to be formlessness.
It has to come. Well, I agree in general. We have to be careful what we mean by formless, but purity comes from the cosmic etheric planes. And the question is, you know, Are they formless? I've often said to myself, if DK is giving me the shape of the Buddhic permanent atom as a figure eight, how formless are forms on the cosmic ethers? See what I mean? So it's not dense form, but there's some kind of configuration going on. And then I say to myself, if I'm a solo logos, is my astral body a realm of form? Is my lower mental body a realm of form? You bet. So what kind of forms are there on the cosmic astral plane and the lower cosmic mental plane? But in general, I agree. It's got to come from above the dense.
The same is that you talk about.
Yeah.
Cosmic astral and the cosmic.
It's still, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
I was wondering if you at all can be pure if you are here on this earth.
I think it's very relative. I think it's very relative.
Even if you take some of the, more developed initiates.
Sure, I mean, look, it's a non-sacred planet. Is the whole planet pure?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is even the highest reaches of our planet pure?
No.
It's a relative question.
You wouldn't be able to survive, I think.
No. But for practical purposes, mm-hmm. if we look at the archetypal planes, that's about as pure as we can understand. Like when Plato was describing his theory of forms, a form was not a dense thing. A form was an idea of a kind on which dense things patterned themselves. So those were pure things, relatively. And they existed, I think, Plato's idea of the forms, I think, they existed on monadic levels. That's what I understand from it. But then, it's just the physical body of the logos, so how pure can it be, you know? And then you want to go higher and higher and higher. Yes.
But would we be able to understand or see, comprehend those kind of forms and those planes? Because we only have this kind of knowledge that we have being here on Earth.
Sure. I
so
think
there might be something quite different.
Okay. I think only in a state of monadic consciousness or monadic awareness, which is probably capable. The Chohan can do that, then I think we would be able to see or comprehend or be aware of those things. They could even be sound forms, like seven great words on the, or seven geometrical forms. How many? But there's only five Platonic solids, aren't there? I wonder how the Platonic solids work out on the cosmic physical plane. Suffice it to say, I agree with you. One has to be in a state of awareness other than our state of awareness to comprehend or even register the kinds of forms we're talking about. So I just think it's such an interesting thing that the causal body is impure. Because it's still a member of the cosmic, of the dense physical body of the solar logos. Not of our planetary logos. I pointed that out many times. The planetary logos.
In a way, it's a good thing that it isn't pure, isn't it? Because otherwise it wouldn't be effective, would it?
Well, we couldn't. Right, exactly. If vibration is too high, it cannot affect changes in a dense area. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, bear this in mind, and some of you probably know it, that the causal body is an item of purity for the planetary logos, but not an item of purity for the solar logos. In other words, the causal body is quasi-etheric for the planetary logos, because his dense physical body is 18 subplanes, and the dense physical body of the solar logos is 21 subplanes, and therefore includes the causal body. So here's the principle. The principle is this, that a dense physical body is not a principle. That's the principle. Okay. So if a dense physical body is not a principle, then anything that is part of a dense physical body is also not a principle, and therefore certainly impure. So the planetary logos is in a in between position between the solar logos and man. Are we still on white magic? Where are we?
But isn't he about to take the next initiation? So he must be about getting
okay.
Pure.
Well, okay. What makes a sacred planet? See, and we're told that five initiations make a sacred planet, but I will let me complicate the issue for just a minute. Five initiations of what? Five initiations of a globe lord? Five initiations of a chain lord? Or five initiations of a scheme lord, who is the planetary logos himself? So I have a feeling that we will only be a truly, truly sacred planetary scheme. See, maybe you can be a sacred globe, or maybe you can be a sacred chain. But what does it mean to be a sacred scheme? And I think that comes much later in the day. I think that Venus is already a sacred scheme. But I think that our planetary logos is headed for his second cosmic initiation. If he achieves five cosmic initiations, will he be sacred? Or, and here's the other possibility, you know, when I lose my mind, I become abstract. I'm sorry. Here's the other possibility, very quickly. 384. That for our planetary logos, he has for objective seven initiations, the second cosmic initiation being his goal. So is it possible that among these seven initiations, there is a fifth lesser initiation which would make for sacredness? Or does it have to be the fifth cosmic initiation? See, these things are woven very... in other words, there is a series of seven initiations. And the cosmic series is different from the seven. That's what I'm getting here. So do you have to wait until you take five cosmic initiations to be sacred? Or when you arrive at the fifth of the seven, are you sacred? Now, you know, I don't know the answer to that question. In the fifth round, we are due to have something called the Judgment Day. After the Judgment Day, only human beings who are on the path will be on Earth. And he gives the proportion, 1/5, 3/10, 2/5, and all the rest of it. Will our planet be sacred then? Because we are supposed to take the Judgment Day in the next round. However, the next round might be around five rounds here, or it might be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 big rounds. And is that when the Judgment Day occurs, after five big rounds? Anyway, I think, you know, I can tell by looking at you that you need a break. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why? What about Jupiter? Why is he saying that it has just started its work?
Well, no, wait. It's not entirely, because I know what you're saying, but some of the planets... Okay, I'll make an analogy. Let's look at your lower chakras and your higher chakras. The lower chakras unfold more rapidly and develop more rapidly. So let's just say some of my lower chakras are 80% unfolded, maybe more. And some of my higher chakras are only 20% or 15% unfolded. Jupiter is like a higher chakra that takes longer to unfold because you've got to do the lower chakras first. Does that make sense? And whatever represents this is the least unfolded, because it's the last one to gain its full power. But of course it depends on what type of human being you are. You know, maybe some people have this a little sooner. The man, he did one measurement for a man, and I may have showed you, but a picture's worth a thousand words here. And I'll show you exactly what I mean, and then you can have a break. Okay, take a look. Here's the very first disciple that he talked about. BSD. His solar plexus center was 75% awakened. He didn't even mention the sacral and base of the spine. Probably because those are not... The sacral should be passed by, and the base of the spine is not yet. So he has no... He's not supposed to attend to those things. Solar plexus is 70. Heart was 50. Throat center 60. He was a third-ray soul. Ajna center, only 15% awakened. And the head center was more awakened because he was a mystic. In other words, he had been a mystic for a long time, a very mental type of mystic, but a mystic nevertheless. And so remember what it said, that when the soul influences comes to the top of the head, it gives you mysticism. In any case, consider every one of these a planet. And consider, for sake of illustration, that the solar plexus is the lowest planet of them all, listed. It's like Mars. The solar plexus gets very far unfolded before the higher planets unfold. So Jupiter, Saturn are behind. See, here's the place to find it. It's in a treatise, it's in the esoteric psychology book, esoteric astrology book, and I'll just go to esoteric healing here and you'll see what I mean. Okay, right here. And then I'll just go backwards. Right, this is it, right there, is what you're looking at.
But when it's Jupiter has fulfilled opened all the chakras, will it then be more developed than the other?
No.
Relatively, or?
Discriminate the difference between developed and advanced. Jupiter is an advanced planet. Mm-hmm. So is Saturn, so is Uranus, so is Neptune. Venus is a less advanced but more developed planet. Okay. Developed and unfolded mean the same. Mm-hmm. So you can have here's another analogy. A young soul is 80 years old. An old soul is 10. The young soul is less advanced but more unfolded. The old soul is more advanced but less unfolded. See what I mean? So Jupiter is an advanced god. He's not as advanced as Saturn. Saturn is maybe the oldest of the gods in a certain way, but Saturn is not as advanced as Uranus or Neptune. And therefore, in our solar system here, Saturn and Jupiter, and for some reason Vulcan as well, they are retarded in their degree of unfoldment at the present time because they didn't begin unfolding right away. You know, in your chakra system, there is a maintenance level for each chakra. It just pulsates a little bit. A little bit. Enough to keep life going. So this little bit of pulsation, it just keeps on that way until down here there's a lot of development, and then these start going. And then they will unfold, and they will be the last to unfold. Now I do believe that Jupiter will finish his unfoldment before Saturn does, and I want to show you why. I want to get a better picture for you here. And then you can have a break. Promises, promises. Look here. Jupiter is only 0.5 Jupiter is not central to this whole setup. Saturn is really all of this. This is greater Saturn, with planetary Saturn in the middle, but still more important than Jupiter. So all of these lesser chakras have to unfold before there is a completeness of the one in the center. So I just want to make a long story short and say, when you want to know what's happening to planets, try the analogy of comparing it to your chakra system. And I think light will be shed on the subject. Okay, now you can have a break. Yes, Anna? Everyone else can go except Anna.
But in the end of the day,
yes,
will all the planets then end up at the same level?
No. In any one lifetime, if I am a young soul and I reach the age of 90, and I am an old soul and I reach the age of 90,
yes,
we're not at the same level.
No.
It goes like this. See, I will rise, but the old soul will keep rising too, and will always be separated.
Yes.
Until the end. Yes, until the end.
Until the end of
time. Until the end of the class. Just forget. We're going to skip lunch today. All right. There's a lot of things going on.
I don't know what this is for.